The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International.
I looked at her and I said, if you don't take me to Alcoholics Anonymous, I won't go. Mm. And if I don't go, I don't think we're going to make it. I knew if I drank again, I'd lose everything.
With his world on the brink of collapse, comedian Jeff Allen found solace in an unexpected place.
Meaningless, meaningless, all in life is meaningless. Mm. And my heart leapt. Yes, yes. It was such a deep, profound truth that I knew in my heart.
Next on Life Today.
Welcome to Life Today. I'm Randy Robinson. Tammy Trent is with me.
Hello.
And we're looking forward to today's program.
Yes.
Because it's been, oh wow, 1999 was the first time Jeff Allen came on Life Today, and we have been laughing ever since. I mean, I'm excited to have him here in the studio.
Yes.
Welcome to Life Today.
I am here, and I gotta tell you, last time I was here, the place was packed.
It was.
You see what word of mouth does? If you don't like the comedy, man, just keep your mouth shut. Nobody likes a bunch of whiners.
They used to come when Sheila was the co-host, but now Tammy's here, and
yes,
we can't get an audience.
And fellow Nashvilleites.
So, yes. Oh, my goodness.
Well, I mean, we've been just enjoying your comedy. You've done our Christmas banquet. You know, you've been a guest on the program. But you've done a lot of big auditoriums, headlining groups, secular stuff. How's the comedy going for you?
It's going gangbusters. I haven't been this busy. We had a number of videos go viral on the internet through Dry Bar Comedy, and changed my lives. You know, it's at this point in our life, you know, we were just kind of settling in, and especially after COVID.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
COVID was like half my friends have retired.
A lot of the online has really helped you. You're a big fan of the internet. You like technology?
Well, it's made my career.
Has it?
So I don't know anything about it. I pay people that are under 30. You know, they tell me about algorithms. I said, I don't know. Just, you know, do what you do. I don't know what you do. But
now, I don't understand it myself, but I do know you have such an incredible story, and you have a new book out.
I do.
Are We There Yet? And it's an incredible story of redemption, of what you would say yourself, I had a messed up life. And if God could bring me through this to the other side, he could do this to anybody and for anybody. But I wonder if there might be one person in the world watching right now that says, I don't know who Jeff Allen is. Take us back. Can you just give us a little backstory of your life to how you got to this point of, are we there yet, God?
Well, I got married at 30. I was an alcoholic and a drug addict. And then 31, I got sober. I write about this in the book. My father asked me, what was the catalyst that got me to quit drinking? And I had a six-month-old son. He was crying, and I spanked him. Tammy took him away from me, looked at me, and said, who does this? Sat on the end of the bed and fed our son. And the shame that washed over me that night, I looked at her and I said, if you don't take me to Alcoholics Anonymous, I won't go. Mm-hmm. And if I don't go, I don't think we're going to make it. Anyway, I knew I couldn't keep doing what I was doing and be married and have kids. So anyway, I went to this program and they said, pray. I said, to what? I didn't believe in God, you know? And, you know, I tell churches all the time because there seems to be this friction between 12-step programs and the church. And I said, I wouldn't be here. If I walked into a 12-step program and they go, you need Jesus, I'd have left. I mean, I was told to stay away from Christians. You know, I write about that in the book. My father told me when I was 14, stay away from Christians, they're bad people. So anyway, I started praying. I did what I was told. I knew if I drank again, I'd lose everything. So I didn't, I was done. I was done drinking, but I had a hard time living. Mm. So they said, pray. So they gave me two prayers that I prayed religiously every day. I'd pray multiple times. The serenity prayer, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. And then the other one was what they call the third step prayer, which was God remove me from the bondage of self so that I may better do thy will, taking away my difficulties so that victory over them, others may bear witness to thy strength, thy power, and thy life. And I look back on that and I think, here I am, this naive human being. I have no idea what I'm praying. I was told to pray this. And in the end, this is what I do. I bear witness to God's strength, his power, and his way of life. But I didn't know it. It was years. But those 7 or 8 years, we went through just about everything that you could think of that would break a marriage up. Bankruptcy, we went, again, you try to salve the wounds of a broken marriage by buying things you can't afford. Geographical cures, we used to move every 2 years because we think if it's miserable here, we'll just move somewhere else and it'll be fine. You know, I always tell people when your marriage is full of acrimony, that's bad. Wait till you get to apathy.
Wow.
There's nothing worse
than
when we just gave up. You know, we coexisted in the same house. We'd walk, like, you know, we ate dinner. We were cordial people for the most part. You know, we had a share of disagreements, but I got tired of arguing, and I knew what would happen to me if I flipped. Mm-hmm. And I just was done. And mm-hmm. Tammy would just shake me. We're losing the house, and you don't care. And I go, I don't. She goes, who says that? I go, someone who doesn't care. I mean, obviously. I mean, but you know, you don't think I want to care? I wanted to care. I mean, I felt the weight of it.
Yeah.
But I didn't know why it mattered, you know? And that was the, you know, where the, you know, to search for meaning and point is so relevant today.
Here's my question, because you mentioned you went to rehab, AA, they talk about a higher power,
right? Yeah.
In sort of a generic way. But that many years go by before that higher power became a person, like
right.
someone you could relate to. What was that sort of in between, and what got you to the point where you went, okay, no, this is an actual person that I can have a relationship with, and it transforms
Well, the
everything.
Best description I can give is, in hindsight, again, I'm writing this sure. 35 years later,
right.
is I had a spiritual thirst. I think we all do. Mm-hmm. We don't may not be able to identify it, but there was a spiritual thirst. So I went into books. I never read a book my entire life. I got sober. Went to a therapist, and she said, do you read? I go, no, I can't sit still long enough to read. She goes, well, you should. She gave me Road Less Traveled and Scott Peck's book, really good book. But I got two things that I still remember out of it. The opening line, life is difficult. When it can be accepted as such, it no longer is difficult. It just becomes a series of problems that need to be solved. So that made sense to me logically. I just go, okay, I have a bunch of problems. I have terrible tools in solving them, which is basically what my therapist told me. And then the second one was true love cannot exist in any, true love doesn't exist until conflict enters a relationship. There's no such thing as a conflict-free loving relationship. And I resonated with me because I hated conflict. So every relationship prior to my marriage, I'd flee conflict, and that was the end of it. So those are two things I got out of that book. And then I just became a voracious reader. I started reading Bradshaw stuff on family dynamic. So everything wasn't necessarily spiritual. It was more psychological. And then that didn't quench the thirst. Mm-hmm. I mean, it gave me knowledge,
right.
but I was still miserable. Yeah. Then I got into New Age and then tried to affirm myself. And it was funny, somebody told me, you need to smile more. I go, I do? Yeah. So I tried to work on smiling in a mirror. It's funny now. I mean, you look back on it, you're this grown funny. Man standing in front of his mirror. And it was like, this is ridiculous. I'm not doing this.
Goodness.
And then to affirm yourself, you know, I mean, again, it goes such in the face of, you're affirmed because of the Imago Deo.
Right.
You know, and but I wasn't there yet. Mm. So then I started Buddhism. And I write about this. I wanted to raise the kids Buddhist.
Wow.
Came home one day and I said, I'm putting the kids in a monastery. And Tammy says, over my dead body. And she says, it's finally happened. I go, what? The last screw has finally fallen out of your head. You know, because I'm everything. Everything that quenched it, I'd bring it home and go, I think I got it, Tammy. I think I got it.
Yeah.
And again, God knows you intimately.
Yes.
Whether you acknowledge him or not, he knows you. He certainly extends common grace to the entire planet. So we are, you know, we are there. He's there waiting, you know. Mm-hmm. And I would have never gone into a church to hear the gospel. Mm. So anyway, I hear about a guy who's doing comedy. He's from Texas here. He goes to Denton Bible. Because of his wealth, he can get me on some really nice golf courses. So I call my agent and say, I want to work with him. You know, again, God knows your heart. So where are you going to hear the gospel? Well, I'm going to hear it on the golf course. I didn't want to hear it. I didn't sign up for that. So I'm out on the golf course asking this capitalist, how do you accumulate wealth? And he said, you don't want a lot of money. I go, I don't. He goes, no, you can't handle what little you have. Mm. it'd be a burden for you. He says, besides, you can't even begin to enjoy the creation until you have a relationship with the one who created it.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow,
and I went, wow. It sounded new agey. I thought, man, that's kind of cool. Would you read it? He goes, well, the relationship's in the Bible with Jesus. Mm. And then I kind of went, you know. A couple holes went by, something else. I'm going, that's great, where'd you read it? He said, I kept bringing up the Bible. I finally said, stop it with the Bible. He goes, what do you mean? I go, well, who actually reads the Bible in this day and age? I mean, the concept of God, God's word, a little archaic. He says, well, it's what's in the Bible that you don't think is true. And I go, well, you know, I'm an atheist. I really am an atheist. I don't believe in God. I never read the Bible. He goes, then you're not really an atheist, you're a moron.
You know? Yes.
And it's like, you know, well, explain that, please, how I'm a moron. He goes, it's the most influential book in the history of the world. You can't even crack it open. That's lazy and moronic. Mm. That's not even intellectually curious. Mm. He said, at least crack it open, study it, read it, whatever, you know, and then come to your conclusion. But to just ignore it.
Yeah.
And anyway, he said, I'd like to help you out. And he signed me up for tapes from Denton Bible.
Love
and,
it.
But we had a friendship for over a year before I opened up one of those tapes.
So what? How did God get you? Because obviously once that happened,
Tammy packed up. We were 10 minutes from filing divorce papers, probably 6 months before the summer she left. And we were on our way to the courthouse to file the papers to end our marriage. And she said, pull over. And we're on the side of the road talking. And I said, you're out. And she said, what do you mean? I said, we file these papers, you're done with it. I said, Tammy, I love you. I really do. I'm just damaged goods. I can't stop raging. I don't know why, but you deserve better than me. She'd give me 7 years, you know. So she said, let's go home. And I said, we go home, divorce is off the table, you know. So anyway, we came home, and anyway, 6 months, she takes the kids. She says, I'm going to my parents for the whole summer. I said, I got to get away from you. You're draining me. I was always in my head. I didn't know what I wanted to do. She goes, figure out what you want to do with your adult life. We got, you know, we're losing the house. We're losing everything. Yeah. So figure it out while I'm gone. And she gathers up these tapes, you know, a whole pile of them. I've been collecting them for over a year. And she says, listen, these are thrones. So I said, leave them on the floor. So eventually I opened one up, and it was Ecclesiastes. Mm. And this was it. Mm. I mean, I'm telling you, in my living room, Phoenix, Arizona, 1996, meaningless, meaningless, all in life is meaningless. Mm-hmm. And my heart leapt. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. It was such a deep, profound truth that I knew in my heart, mm-hmm. nothing matters. Mm-hmm. Everything on this planet is nothing. Didn't matter how much money I made, didn't matter, you know. And then he went on to say, you know, in Ecclesiastes 1, the eyes never get enough of seeing, the ears never get enough of hearing. And I'm looking at a video library that's got 5 shelves of videos. I'm looking at my audio library. By then it was all cassettes and stuff. And I'm going, that's true. We buy things, they wear out, we take them to the landfill. If I'm lucky, I get a sitcom or a movie deal. We buy nice things, but they all wear out, we take them to the landfill. I'm going, it's right, this is true. Mm-hmm. And if this is true, there has to be other, I don't know if there's another chapter in the Bible that would have captured me like that did
right at
that moment. And I ripped open every envelope and looking for more Ecclesiastes tapes. And the next one was, if happiness was an act of human will, basically these are Solomon's conclusions, yeah. through Tommy Nelson. If happiness was an act of human will, we'd all be happy. You ask anybody on earth, what do you want for your children? I want them to be happy. Well, let's define that.
Right.
Is it the next gym shoe, the next iPod, the next, you know, material thing that Blaise Pascal described as a God-shaped hole that we keep stuffing things into? And I did all that. I have tried to affirm myself in the mirror, and he said no. Basically, the conclusions were this: life without God will have no meaning. Without meaning in your life, there's no purpose to your life, and without purpose to your life, you might as well off yourself. And I knew that in my heart was true, and I went, this book. And I soaked that up for the next 2 months. Tammy was gone, no distractions. I mean, God had me right in the place where he wanted me and needed me at the right time.
So in this desert, spiritual desert that you're in, what happened to bring the meaning, to bring the purpose, to bring the joy?
Something finite has to be attached. Every cell in my body was created and put here for a reason. I may not know it right now, but my job as a follower of him is to acknowledge him every morning, thank you for another day, and your will, not mine, be done. I don't know what that is. I mean, I had a mess of a life, believe me. We had debris to clean up, but Tammy, believe me, she came home. I gave my life August 17th, 1996. To me, that was a rebirth.
Yeah, yeah.
And she came home at the end of August with the kids, and it took me about a week or so. She was raised in a home by Christians that abused her. Hmm. So when I told her, I said, I'm a born-again Christian, she goes, what does that mean? I go, I really don't know. You know, I said, I heard the term. I don't know what it means. So anyway, I said, I'm to love you as Jesus loved the church. I did enough study on Ephesians to understand that. And she goes, what does that mean? And I said, well, he gave his life. I'm to give my life to you. And she laughed because she knew how selfish I was. I said, look, I'm just trying to be a better man and a better husband. That's it. And this is my journey. So if you want to come to church with me, come to church. If you don't, don't. But I'm taking the boys. 2 weeks she came. She saw something different. And she told me years later, and I write about this in the book as well. We were sitting at the escrow table. We sold the house. IRS was taking everything. And the escrow lady was just apologizing. I'm so sorry, but the IRS has taken all your profit. And I said, it's okay. The only thing that matters is sitting right here. And Tammy said, for the first time in 8 years, she said, I believed you, that we were a priority.
Wow. Jeff, what I love so much about your story is that God met you right where you were.
Yes.
But he knew individually what he needed to do to get your attention. That Ecclesiastes might not have worked for me.
No.
But it worked for you, and it resonated with you. And something switched in your heart, in your brain at that moment. And even I think when you talk about it, it's like, okay, I can align with this. I believe this. Tell me more. And you stayed in it, and you kept searching, and you wanted the change, you wanted the transformation in it. And it's like it all became so brand new to you, which I love, that innocence of God. Tell me more, show me more. I want my life to change, because what's sitting around this table is the only thing that matters.
Well, it's been right in front of you. It's almost like Dorothy, you know, you can go home. You always had the ability to go home.
Yes.
You know, the value was here.
Yeah.
And I just kept looking. There has to be a point to all of this out there. And the point is love, respect.
Yes.
You know, what do you value? What voices do you listen to?
Yes.
Where's your hope lie? Mm-hmm. What defines you was so important to me, because you ask most men and they start with their job.
It's true.
And what defines me today is I'm a child of his.
Yeah.
And then I'm Tammy's husband, and I'm a father to Aaron and Ryan, grandfather to Evelyn and Vivian.
Yes. How beautiful is that?
Oh, my goodness.
And then I'm a comedian. I am funny.
You are funny, Jeff.
But, you know, you found who you are, and only in Christ. You looked everywhere else.
Absolutely. And again, those 7 or 8 years, that verse would not have resonated without
the
previous. And again, I'd love to have had a Road to Damascus moment where I wake up one day and boom, it's there. I mean, I've heard those stories. Mm-hmm. For me, it was if God had sat me down when I walked in, and he said, here's what I'm going to put you through for the next 8 years. But at the end of this, you're going to know my son. You're going to know a peace. And, I wouldn't have signed on. So this is why he doesn't tell us his plans.
Exactly.
And again, it was all self-inflicted. Everything in that book was self-inflicted. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to blame anybody. I'm not a victim. Mm-hmm. But it's something that I had to go through, apparently, to get to the point where it's like I just surrendered.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I mean, I did. I mean, it's like I'm yours.
I love you sharing your journey and your book, Are We There Yet? You can get this wherever you get books. It will bless you. And if you know someone that's searching, struggling, like Jeff talks about, what a great thing to put in front of them. Mm-hmm. Send them some comedy and then say, you ought to read his book. And Jeff, just thank you for being so honest and open. Yeah. You know, there are so many ways for us to reach out and express God's love to people, to a world that is dying and that needs a real experience with God, like Jeff talked about. And you know what? We've got an opportunity where people are literally hungry, and now we can reach into their lives and give them not just food for their body, but food for their soul. Watch this.
All there is the dry, burnt-out remnants of the last crops that were here. The dry soil that is testament to the fact that nothing can grow here.
Veronica's brought her child here to the screening clinic here in the Kubol area of Angola today. And you can see, I don't have to describe the condition of this child. You can see that this child is suffering.
But you know, the reality is it's not just a lack of crops. It's not just dry, parched soil. It's lives. Lives that are being stolen by the lack of food. Not a war, not some human-made crisis. Simply the fact that there isn't enough rainfall to grow crops to feed their children. And that is what's stealing their lives.
This child is suffering from severe malnutrition. Why? Because there is no food at home.
Literal starvation. Children in these areas that have been starving to death. Children dying of malnutrition. Many parents telling us, we don't know what to do. We don't know where to turn. We've done everything we can do, but we can't feed our children.
For 5 years, there has been a drought in this country that has meant that mothers like Veronica are not able to grow food for their children, are not able to provide what their children need. And you can see that this child, Samuel, is just a representation of more than 250 children that are here today. 250 mothers that have brought their child saying, please help me. Help me save my child's life. The solution is food. The solution is expressing God's heart and extending His hands. And I'm asking you to do that today, please. Give that gift. Give the gift of food. Give the gift of life.
They've done everything they can do, but they can't feed their children. But I want to help. I want to be the one to help. And I want to ask you if you would consider helping as well. They're doing everything they can do, but they need help. So I know you hear us often, every day, talk about the need out there and asking you to help join with us and make a difference in the lives of these children. I hope you don't grow weary. I hope it's not hard to keep hearing the stories, and especially for those people over there in those countries that are hurting so desperately, that are asking for help. I hope we think about them in this season, in this moment, to know that we could be a difference. Randy, there's something simple that we can do. We've seen it. We've been there as we've traveled. We know that that bowl is filled with life. Yeah. Every time we give this to a child and fill it up, it changes their life. And I know that we want to stop them from going into a malnutrition clinic. Right. And we've been there too. And right. I hold this because I'm thinking, I have been with children that have been even tinier, their wrist right. than that. Right. So I know we want to stop that. There's a way we can do that together. And I know that you've been a part of that too.
Yeah, it's the success of the Mission Feeding Outreach. I mean, literally 350,000 children every day yes. get a bowl of food yes. because of your love. Now, let me explain how it works. Mm-hmm. The way we have people on the ground, systems in place, and a track record of doing this so that we're able to get food to people. Your gift today of $30 will actually help feed three children for the next 3 months. Your gift of $100 would help feed 10 children for the next 3 months. So it really is that easy. Many of you could give $1,000, $5,000, $10,000, whatever God has enabled you to do. I just ask you to take a moment and say, God, what would you have me do to share your love? Now, you can get into the complexities of the various situations where we feed, you know, but the bottom line for me is, regardless of the reasons why someone is in that situation where they can no longer feed their children, the response is what's critical in my mind, because we serve a God who says, don't forget the poor. Yes. When you see someone in need, don't withhold good when it's in your power to do something good. So for me, the world is a mess. We know this. There are all sorts of negative things going on. And sometimes it's just a circumstance of weather. You know, the crops don't come in. It doesn't matter to me. I look at it and I say, what are we to do as followers of Christ to show His love to someone who is hurting, to people who are dying? And this is it, mission feeding. We go in, we give them food, we tell them why we're there. We share the love of Christ in word and deed. I just pray that you will respond in love to these people who are dying and hurting. Go to the phone, go online, make the best gift you can.
Across the continent of Africa, children are suffering, facing severe malnutrition and even death. With food reserves gone and many areas experiencing severe famine, we urgently need to replenish supplies to keep feeding the 350,000 children who are counting on us. Through Life's Mission Feeding Outreach, your gift of love can be an answer to prayer for a hurting and hungry child in their time of need. Call now with your life-saving gift of $30, $50, or $100 to help feed and care for 3, 5, or 10 children for 3 full months. With your gift of any amount, we'll send you the brand new Life Planner. Bound in soft touch leather, this planner will help you with your daily walk with space for you to record your appointments, goals, inspirational notes, and prayers. With your gift of $100 or more, please request the God's Promise Serving Bowl. This beautiful and versatile ceramic bowl is decorated with 2 Corinthians 9:8 and will make a lovely addition to your table or home. Finally, with your gift of $1,000 or more to help feed and care for 100 children, be sure to request our inspiring bronze sculpture, Consider the Birds, inspired by Jesus' words in Matthew 6:26. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
I hope you are going online or going to the phone. Make the best gift you can. You can make a difference. You can help save lives. And for your own entertainment, I would highly recommend jeffallencomedy.com.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
People can connect to your social media, see your calendar, all that fun stuff. Pick up the book, Are We There Yet? Yes. Hey, Jeff, it's been a blessing.
So good. And I love your entire testimony. And listen, if you are out there and you're a person that you feel like something is missing in your life, maybe you feel a little lost or you've lost your way, I know that Jeff's book will encourage you in so many ways. There is power in the redemption of Jesus. He can save a marriage. He can save not just your marriage, but he can save your life, just as he has done for Jeff. You're not alone in this. We love you. We're praying for you. Thank you for watching, and we'll see you next time on Life Today. What a year we have all had together. And right now we're at the end of the year. So you have an opportunity to give an end of the year gift that will impact so many lives, not just impact, but it will save lives.
During my battle with Crohn's disease, I took 30 different products, not capsules a day, bottles. None of them worked.
The one element that changed Jordan Rubin's life tomorrow. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.